I think they might have been more comfortable if they were on this side of the auditorium. Sonia could have just played that bass line on the timpani and let Rebecca just beat on the snares a little bit or something. So thank you for that. We'll be looking at the book of Micah this morning. Micah. And so I was studying and reading up on this book and thinking about it again this morning. A while back, I thought I had preached through the book of Malachi, and thought, oh, that was kind of interesting. I'll pick another minor prophet and preach to. And I read the book of Micah two or three times, and I said to myself, no, I don't understand what's going on, and there's too many weird, hard to figure out sayings and all. But so I passed on and did a different book. But there are many particular statements and phrases that are difficult to understand in this. But the general theme is clear. It comes through. And as I was reading, I wanted to read a statement that Harry Ironside said as he was introducing this. It says, the theme of the book is plain. It is the wretched estate of all of Israel because of their sin, and the wonderful deliverance to be brought in by him, quote, whose goings forth have been of old from everlasting. And that, of course, is coming from Micah 5:2. Yet, who was to come out of Bethlehem Ephrata to effect salvation for his people. So as we read through this, we're going to see generally three discourses or three sermons. And those are chapters 1 and 2, and then 3 through 5, and then 6 through 7. You'll see, well, the very first verse just kind of tells us who Micah is, where he's from, when he prophesied. But then Micah 1, verse 2 says, hear, all ye people. There's a couple other hears in there, but then chapter 3, verse 1 says, and I said, hear, I pray you. Chapter 3, verse 1. And then chapter 6, verse 1 says, hear ye now what the Lord saith. And as we go through this, we'll see that in chapters 1 and 2, God is bringing the people together, bringing Israel together or to judge them, and then he brings them back in deliverance. There's judgment, and then there's a promise. And then in chapters 3 through 5, God judges in particular, the rulers of the people, the prophets, the rulers, the priests, and then shows us what will happen when he comes and delivers them, in a kind of an extensive treatment of the millennial reign of Christ, which is, of course, still yet to come. And then chapters 6 and 7, we have God's controversy. He has a controversy. He addresses Israel directly and says, why are you acting this way after all the things that I have done for you and provided for you? And then yet promises his final deliverance. So we kind of have three sermons here. Each one has a pronouncement of judgment and then a promise. Pronouncement of judgment and then a promise and a pronouncement of judgment and then a promise. As I have through the summer, I'm going to read the text and try to just bring out, try to give you some explanation of maybe difficult words. But I will say, especially with this one, there are some times that I'm not going to try to tell you what people think it means because I'm still confused about it, the particular statements. And this is why I kind of like being able to just cover the whole book, because we can still get the theme of it. And as you go back through and read this in your devotions, if you're following along with us, it's going to be in before the end of the year. You'll be reading. It's not now. We're in Hosea on Fridays. But before the end of the year, we'll get to Micah. And as you read it again, maybe this will be helpful to help us keep the big picture of what is being said there. And again, the main picture is that Israel has went away from God. They're wicked. They're full of evil. And God will judge that, and then he will deliver his people. Of course, I'm going to just mention this every week. We have different visitors all the time. I am reading from the King James Version of the Bible, but out loud, the Lord and the Lord sounds the same. And in the Bible, when you see capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, that is a translation or a representation of God's personal name, Jehovah. The Lord is the Lord is a title for him. He is a Lord. Just like he is a God and he is a Savior and all of that, those are titles for God, those are actually titles for Jehovah, and that is his name, the name that he made himself known to Israel in. And so since I'm reading a lot out loud, I'm just going to substitute the word Jehovah when you would see those capital letters, and hopefully that you'll remember that as we go along. And I'm not trying to be confusing. I'm trying actually to be a little more clear or accurate. So, Micah chapter 1, verse 1. The word of Jehovah that came to Micah the Moreshethite in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, which he saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem. And before we go on, Micah's name means who is like the Lord, or who is like Jehovah. And he actually has a play on his own name toward the end of the book. And there's there's several places where he does a play on names and what he says about them. And we won't have time to go through all those. But Moreshethite or Moreshagath, there's a few names he describes, is southwest of Jerusalem, toward Philistia from Jerusalem. So he was a prophet from Judah. He prophesies to all the people of Israel. The time of his prophecy is while the nation of Israel is still in existence, but very later than the ones we've talked about before. And so their destruction is coming quickly and may even have happened during his ministry. But so he addresses mostly Judah. He's from Judah, but it applies to Israel. So we get his first address, or the first kind of sermon, if we say, "Hear, all ye people, hearken, O earth, and all that therein is, and let the Lord Jehovah be witness against you, the Lord from his holy temple. For behold, Jehovah comes forth out of his place, and will come down, and tread upon the high places of the earth, and the mountains," this represents prominent people and cities, "shall be molten under him, and the valleys," that represents insignificant people and cities, "shall be cleft as wax before the fire, and as the waters that are poured down a steep place. Why? For the transgression of Jacob is all this, and for the sins of the house of Israel. What is the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? And what are the high places of Judah? Are they not Jerusalem?" He's not saying that it was a sin to build the city of Jerusalem or Samaria. He's just saying Samaria and Jerusalem are representative of are going to be representatives of the sins of the people. And what happens to them is going to be representative of the judgment that will come upon them. "Therefore, I will make Samaria as a heap of the field and as plantings of a vineyard, and will pour down the stones thereof into the valley." Samaria was built up high, and so the stones will be poured into the valley, "and I will discover the foundations thereof." So they're going to completely destroy the city so much that you're going to see the foundations, not just beat it down and have a pile of rubbish up, but just completely destroy it. You'll see the foundations thereof, "and all the graven images thereof shall be beaten to pieces, and all the hires," or the money that comes from that, "thereof shall be burned with fire, and all the idols thereof will I lay desolate, for she gathered it of the hire of an harlot, and they shall return to the hire of an harlot. Therefore," I'm just going to move along. "Therefore I will wail and howl and go stripped and naked. I will make a wailing like the dragons and mourning as the owls. For her wound is incurable, for it has come unto Judah. He has come under the gate of my people, even to Jerusalem." So the Assyrians did all this to the people of Israel. And actually, the Assyrian Sennacherib destroyed almost all of Judah, and they were held at the gate of Jerusalem. So this seems to foretell what happens when Sennacherib comes and captures all of Israel and destroys many cities and yet is held off at Jerusalem. It says, declare ye not at Gath. He says, don't tell the Philistines what has happened, because they will enjoy this very much. Don't even mention it there. Weep ye not at all. In the house of Ophrah, roll thyself in the dust. You go ahead and mourn there. Pass ye away, thou inhabitant of Saphir, having thy shame naked. The inhabitant of Zanan came not forth in the mourning of Beth-Ezel. He shall receive you of his standing. For the inhabitant of Marath waited carefully for good, but evil came down from Jehovah unto the gate of Jerusalem. O thou inhabitant of Lachish, bind the chariot to the swift beast. She is the beginning of the sin to the daughter of Zion, for the transgressions of Israel were found in thee. Lachish was a prominent city in Judah, but the transgressions, the idol worship that they were participating in Israel, was found in there. And that seems to be, perhaps from this, the first city of Judah that joined in those idolatrous practices. And then, of course, it spread throughout the country. Therefore shalt thou give presents to Moresheth-Gath. The houses of Achzib shall be a lie to the kings of Israel. Yet will I bring an heir unto thee, O inhabitant of Marashah. He shall come unto Adullam, the glory of Israel. Make thee bald and poll thee for thy delicate children. Enlarge thy boldness as the eagle, for they are gone into captivity from thee. There's individual wickedness. Woe to them that devise iniquity and work evil upon their beds. When the morning is light, they practice it, because it is in the power of their hand. And they covet fields and take them by violence, and houses and take them away. So they oppress a man and his house, even a man and his heritage. Therefore, thus saith Jehovah, behold, against this family do I devise an evil, from which ye shall not remove your necks, neither shall ye go haughtily, for this time is evil. There's no land or inheritance. In that day shall one take up a parable against you and lament with a doleful lamentation and say, we be utterly spoiled. He has changed the portion of my people. How has he removed it from me, their land, their portion, their inheritance? Turning away, he has divided our fields. Therefore thou shalt have none that shall cast a cord by lot in the congregation of Judah. No one could set the lines of their boundaries, because they didn't have any boundaries. Prophesy ye not, say they to them that prophesy. They shall not prophesy to them, that they shall not take shame. O thou that art named the house of Jacob, is the spirit of Jehovah straitened? Are these his doings? Do not my words do good to him that walks uprightly? Even of late my people is risen up as an enemy. Ye pull off the robe with the garment from them that pass by securely as men averse from war. The women or the widows of my people have you cast out from their pleasant homes. From their children or orphans have you taken away my glory forever. Arise ye and depart, for this is not your rest. Because it is polluted, it shall destroy you, even with a sore destruction. If a man walking in the spirit in falsehood do lie, saying, I will prophesy unto thee of wine and of strong drink, he shall even be the prophet of this people. But in the future there will be deliverance. I will surely assemble, O Jacob, all of thee. I will surely gather the remnant of Israel. I will put them together as the sheep of Bozra, as the flock in the midst of their fold. They shall make great noise by reason of the multitude of men. The breaker, or the wall breaker, is come up before them. They have broken up and have passed through the gate and are gone out by it, and their king shall pass before them, and Jehovah on the head of them. So now we have, that's the first section. Now we have the second section, chapters 3 through 5, and God pronounces judgment on these rulers and then tells of the future millennial reign. And first we have the princes. And I said, hear, I pray you, O heads of Jacob and ye princes of the house of Israel, is it not for you to know judgment, who hate the good and love the evil, who pluck off their skin from off them and their flesh from off their bones, who also eat the flesh of my people and flay their skin from off them, And they break their bones and chop them in pieces as for the pot and as flesh within the cauldron. Then shall they cry unto Jehovah, but he will not hear them. He will even hide his face from them at that time, as they have behaved themselves ill in their doing. So the rulers were taking advantage of the people, destroying them, and they were going to receive judgment. They would cry out to God, but he would not be there for them. And then there's false prophets. Thus saith Jehovah concerning the prophets that make my people err, that bite with their teeth and cry peace. That means when they're fed well, they bite with their teeth, they prophesy good things to the people. That's what that means. And he that puts not into their mouths, they even prepare war against him. If you're not fed well, if you don't bring a good offering or good payment, he says, you have war coming up in your future. Okay, so what are these? They're making up prophecies depending on what the people, how the people treat them monetarily. Therefore, night shall be unto you that ye shall not have a vision, and it shall be dark unto you that ye shall not divine, and the sun shall go down over the prophets, and the day shall be dark over them. Then shall the seers be ashamed, and the diviners confounded. Yea, they shall all cover their lips, for there's no answer of God. Speaks of himself, but truly I am full of power by the Spirit of Jehovah, and of judgment, and of might, to declare unto Jacob his transgression, and to Israel his sin. Hear this, I pray you, ye heads of the house of Jacob. So these are all their leaders. And princes of the house of Israel, that abhor judgment and pervert all, and it would be like abhor justice and pervert all equity. They build up Zion, they build up their city with blood, and Jerusalem with iniquity. The heads thereof judge for reward. They make their judgment based on reward. And the priests thereof teach for hire. And the prophets thereof divine for money. Yet will they lean upon Jehovah. In the middle of all that, they're going to say that Jehovah is, that they're speaking the word, doing the work of Jehovah. They still claim that they're doing the work of God. And say, none evil can come upon us. Therefore shall Zion for your sake be plowed as a field, and Jerusalem shall become heaps, and the mountain of the house is the high places of the forest. But then we see Jerusalem in the last days. But in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of Jehoshaphat shall be established in the top of the mountains. And it shall be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow unto it. And many nations shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of Jehovah and to the house of the God of Jacob. And he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For the law shall go forth of Zion, and the word of Jehovah from Jerusalem. See, this is a completely different picture as the previous chapter. And he shall judge among many people, and rebuke strong nations afar off. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. So there's no need for swords and spears. But they shall sit every man under his vine and under his fig tree, and none shall make them afraid. This is a picture of prosperity, the vine and the fig tree, sitting under the vine and the fig tree. So there is much need for plowshares and pruning hooks. As a side note, this verse, George Washington used it often to talk about what he wanted to do with his life. He did not want to be the leader and be forced into all the positions that when the war was over, and even before that time when his work was over, he wanted to go home and sit under his vine and his fig tree. He used that phrase often. It's interesting that a man that some people think is a deist used a phrase from Micah. How many of you just go around speaking phrases from Micah? Okay, he knew his Bible fairly well, and he was not a deist. He was a good Christian. But anyway, where was I? Oh, there it is. For the mouth, there's much need for plows and pruning hooks, because everything is going to be perfect. The Lord is going to be ruling at that time. The mouth of Jehovah of hosts has spoken it. For all the people will walk everyone in the name of God, and we will walk in the name of Jehovah our God forever and ever. In that day, saith Jehovah, will I assemble her that halts, and will gather her that is driven out, and her that I have afflicted, and I will make her that halted a remnant, and her that was cast far off a strong nation. And Jehovah shall reign over them in Mount Zion from henceforth, even forever. He's going to bring back his people. And thou, O tower of the flock and stronghold of the daughter of Zion, unto thee shall it come. Even the first dominion, the kingdom shall come to the daughter of Jerusalem. Now why dost thou cry out aloud? Is there no king in there? Is thy counselor perished? For pangs have taken thee as a woman in travail. Be in pain and labor to bring forth, O daughter of Zion, like a woman in travail. For now shalt thou go forth out of the city, and thou shalt dwell in the field, and thou shalt go even to Babylon. There shalt thou be delivered. There Jehovah shall redeem thee from the hand of thine enemies. Now also many nations are gathered against thee, that say, let her be defiled, and let our eye look upon Zion. But they know not the thoughts of Jehovah, neither understand they his counsel. For he shall gather them as the sheaves into the floor. Arise and thresh, O daughter of Zion, for I will make thine horn iron, and I will make thy hoofs brass, and thou shalt beat in pieces many people, and I will consecrate their gain unto Jehovah and their substance unto the Lord of the whole earth. Now, those phrases there seem to picture what's going to happen during the tribulation and the millennial reign, and we'll just let that be the explanation of it. Here's even more. Now, gather thyself in troops, O daughter of troops. He hath laid siege against us. They shall smite the judge of Israel with a rod upon the cheek. But thou, Bethlehem Ephratah, though thou be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall he come forth unto me, that is to be ruler in Israel. And this ruler will be someone whose goings forth have been from old, from everlasting, an eternal being, the Son of God. And it's interesting that the rulers of Israel knew this when Jesus was born. They are the ones that brought up this passage to Herod, and yet they didn't do anything with it. They knew that the eternal Son of God was supposed to be born in Bethlehem, and somebody came looking for it, and others went to worship him, but they didn't matter to them. Therefore, will he give them up until the time that which travails has brought forth. And again, we have this travailing. If you think of Revelation has the woman and the serpent and all of this, just this fits into that, and we'll just read it. Has brought forth, then the remnant of his brethren shall return unto the children of Israel. He shall stand and feed in the strength of Jehovah, in the majesty of the name of Jehovah his God, and they shall abide. For now shall he be great unto the ends of the earth, and this man shall be the peace. When the Assyrian shall come into our land, and when he shall tread in our palaces, then shall we raise against him 7 shepherds and 8 principal men, and they shall waste the land of Assyria with the sword, and the land of Nimrod in the entrances thereof. Thus shall he deliver us from the Assyrian when he comes into our land, and when he treads within our borders. The Assyrian in this passage seems to indicate whoever is the current enemy of Israel. Probably won't be actually named an Assyrian in the future when this takes place, but it could be, I suppose, but it's representative. And the remnant of Jacob shall be in the midst of many people as a dew from Jehovah, as the showers upon the grass that tarries not for man nor waits for the sons of man. So the remnant of Jacob will be a blessing to all people, just like rain, like a dew on the grass. And the remnant of Jacob shall be among the Gentiles in the midst of many people, as a lion among the beasts of the forest, as a young lion among the flocks of sheep, who, if he go through, both treads down and tears in pieces, and none can deliver. Thine hand shall be lifted up upon thine adversaries, and all thine enemies shall be cut off. And it shall come to pass in that day, saith Jehovah, that I will cut off thy horses out of the midst of thee, and I will destroy thy chariots, and I will cut off the cities of thy land, and throw down all thy strongholds, and I will cut off witchcrafts out of thine hand, and thou shalt have no more soothsayers. Thy graven images also will I cut off, and thy standing images out of the midst of thee, and thou shalt no more worship the work of thine hands. And I will pluck up thy groves out of the midst of thee, so will I destroy thy cities, and I will execute vengeance in anger and fury upon the heathen, such as they have not heard. Seems that that is all referring to the heathen. And now we come to the last section. God indicts, he has a controversy with the people of Israel, and then his final deliverance promised again. Hear ye now what Jehovah saith. Arise, contend thou before the mountains, and let the hills hear thy voice. Hear ye, O mountains, Jehovah's controversy, and ye strong foundations of the earth. For Jehovah has a controversy with his people, and he will plead with Israel. And we hear it. O my people, what have I done unto thee? And wherein have I wearied thee? Testify against me. For I brought thee up out of the land of Egypt, and redeemed thee out of the house of servants. And I sent before thee Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. O my people, remember now what Balak, king of Moab, consulted, and what Balaam, the son of Beor, answered him from Shittim unto Gilgal, that ye may know the righteousness of Jehovah. Remember, Balaam tried to pronounce curses on the people of Israel, but he spoke whatever the Lord said, and the Lord blessed them. Wherewith shall I come before Jehovah and bow myself before the high God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves of a year old? Will Jehovah be pleased with thousands of rams or with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He hath showed thee, O man. And we get in toward the end of Micah, we see this. God built a Levitical system, but God has always, it's not been works and offerings that he has desired. He has showed thee, O man, what is good, and what does Jehovah require of thee, but to do justly, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God. Jehovah's voice cries unto the city, and the man of wisdom shall see thy name. Hear ye the rod, and who has appointed it? We ought to listen to the rod when it comes into our lives. Are there yet the treasures of wickedness in the house of the wicked, and the scant measure that is abominable? Shall I count them pure with the wicked balances, and with the bag of deceitful weights? For the rich men thereof are full of violence, and the inhabitants thereof have spoken lies, and their tongue is deceitful in their mouth. Therefore also will I make thee sick in smiting thee, in making thee desolate because of thy sins. Thou shalt eat, but not be satisfied, and thy casting down shall be in the midst of thee, and thou shalt take hold, but shalt not deliver. And that which thou deliverest will I give up to the sword. Thou shalt sow, but thou shalt not reap. Thou shalt tread the olives, but thou shalt not anoint thee with oil, and sweet wine, but shalt not drink wine. For the statutes of Omri was the father of Ahab, and they brought in the pagan worship, are kept, and the works of the house of Ahab, and ye walk in their counsels, that I should make thee a desolation, and the inhabitants thereof a hissing. Therefore ye shall bear the reproach of my people. Woe is me, for I am as when they have gathered the summer fruits, as the grape gleanings of the vintage. There is no cluster to eat. My soul desired the first ripe fruit. The good man is perished out of the earth, and there is none upright among men. They all lie in wait for blood. They hunt every man his brother with a net, that they may do evil with both hands earnestly. They're given over to evil. The prince asks for a reward. The judge asks for a reward. And the great man, he utters his mischievous desire. So they wrap it up. The powerful man comes to the judge and says, this is what I want. And the poor man doesn't have a chance. The best of them is a briar. The most upright is sharper than a thorn hedge. The day of thy watchman and thy visitation comes. Now shall be their perplexity. Trust ye not in a friend, but put ye not confidence in a guide. Keep the doors of thy mouth from her that lies in thy bosom. For the son dishonors the father, and the daughter rises up against her mother, the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. Jesus, of course, quoted this. A man's enemies are the men of his own house. Therefore I will look unto Jehovah. I will wait for the God of my salvation. My God will hear me. Rejoice not against me, O mine enemy, when I fall. I shall arise. When I sit in darkness, Jehovah shall be a light unto me. This verse is interesting. I will bear the indignation of Jehovah because I have sinned against him. Until he plead my cause and execute judgment for me, he will bring me forth to the light and I shall behold his righteousness. This is submission to the will of God and to the judgment of God. I will bear the indignation of Jehovah because I have sinned against him. And when that takes place, then God begins to work for them. Then she that is mine enemy shall see it, and shame shall cover her which said unto me, where is Jehovah thy God? Mine eyes shall behold her. Now shall she be trodden down as the mire of the streets. In the day that thy walls are to be built, in that day shall the decree be far removed. In that day also he shall come even to thee from Assyria, and from the fortified cities, and from the fortress even to the river, and from sea to sea, and from mountain to mountain. Notwithstanding, the land shall be desolate because of them that dwell therein for the fruit of their doings. Feed thy people with thy rod, the flock of thine heritage, which dwell solitarily in the wood, in the midst of Carmel. Let them feed in Bashan and Gilead, as in the days of old. According to the days of thy coming out of the land of Egypt, will I show unto him marvelous things. The nations shall see and be confounded at all their might. They shall lay their hand upon their mouth. Their ears shall be deaf. They shall lick the dust like a serpent. They shall move out of their holes like worms of the earth. They shall be afraid of Jehovah our God, and shall fear because of thee. This last paragraph, this is what God has always been, and I kind of referred to that once already. Who is a God like unto thee? And that is what Micah's name means, basically. Just a little play on his name. Who is a God like unto thee? There's no God like our God. All the other gods of the earth are capricious, meaning they just do whatever they want, when they want. They're revengeful. They're vicious. They are not this God that what? Pardons iniquity and passes by the transgression of the remnant of his heritage. He retains not his anger forever because he delights in mercy. He will turn again. He will have compassion upon us. He will subdue our iniquities, and thou wilt cast all their sins into the depths of the sea. Thou wilt perform the truth to Jacob and the mercy to Abraham, which thou hast sworn unto our fathers from the days of old. That is our God. If you don't know him as your God, if your conscience smites you and you get no relief, come to Christ, and through Christ gain forgiveness and pardon and mercy, and God will then cast your sins into the depths of the sea. Let's pray. Our Father, we thank you.